tuned.
I'm a blue fiend. Yeah, fiending for the fiend. Just a blue fiend. Yeah, fiending for the fiend. Shocking blue fiend. Oh, fiending for the fiend. And shocking blue on WBAI 99.5 FM New York 99.5 FM. Yeah.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI. Time is 8 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. It's Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour. Good morning, evening, afternoon, Isaac. How are you?
You saved it there. That's
well, I don't know. I don't really know what it is. It's dark outside. That's all I know.
That's true.
It's not supposed to be dark. But
it's abnormally dark from the rain.
Yeah, it is. We have some updates on various issues that concern us and some new items on new things that will be concerning us in the very near future. We hope to be hearing from Bernie S. later in the show. And anything new with you this week?
Not all that much. No, yeah. Just kind of, you know, rolling through my pathetic little life.
Have fun at the 2600 meetings.
Oh, yes,
Friday.
I did. Yeah. I always do.
Cops didn't catch up to you guys, did they?
No. I got my Cinnabon, and I was a very happy fellow.
Yeah, well, it's 2600 meetings, of course, are always a fun place to congregate and
Run away
and discuss various tactics and schemes and things like that. And, of course, they take place all over the world the first Friday of every month. And, you know, we're actually getting registrations for H2K already.
Really?
We're already registering for the conference, yeah, next summer.
Did we, like, have an address for this?
Well, on the webpage, there's information like that, which is www.h2k.net. And I guess you can get all the information there, except that we... People should not be making reservations at the hotel yet because we haven't gotten a discount rate yet, which we will be getting.
Cool.
And that should be in the next day or so. Still waiting to hear back from them. So, yeah, it will be taking place July 14th through 16th, a massive gathering of hackers and their various followers from around the planet.
That'll be interesting.
Oh, it'll make you sick, I think. Just, you know, the height some people reach, you know, in basically trying to infiltrate the hacker culture. especially among the media.
They're the ones to have the most fun with, though, you know.
Well, yeah, if you know what they're doing.
They play with their minds, and they get really confused, and then you watch them babble like an idiot. But, well, then again, they usually always babble like an idiot.
Thing is, how
but
people...
But it would be because of you, you know.
Well, people buy into it way too easily, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they really do, and I think, you know, a lot of people out there that have dealt with the media know what I'm talking about. Whether you've dealt with the media on hacker issues or not, the thing is, you can never really trust people. You never really know... You know, if they're telling you the truth, because most of the time they have ulterior motives. They've written the story already. Witness, you know, things like takedown.
They just want you to verify little bits and pieces.
They want your sound bites, which they can just sort of insert. The only thing you should really ever agree to do, I think, is live television, where they can't cut away to a commercial just as you start to say something interesting.
True. And also get the expression on your face. Live radio is pretty good.
Well, live radio is good too, but, you know, it's hard to find radio stations that allow you to speak out.
I don't know. I think we did.
Well, we're the exception. We're the exception. But if you tune down the dial, you won't find very many others. And in fact, the struggle to get low power FM onto the radio dial is being fought tooth and nail.
Oh, yes.
By two strong entities. You know who they are? Go ahead.
No,
give a wild guess.
I would imagine one of them being the FCC.
Who are
the
two big evils? Do you think the FCC is one of them? Actually, the FCC is pushing it.
Okay. Well, Chairman Kennard, again, kudos to you, sir. I'd give you a hug, except I'm not that kind of guy, and I'm here in New York, and you're in D.C.
Metroliner.
Ooh, that's true.
Yeah.
All right, look out there, sir. You're going to get a hug.
I think he deserves it. You know,
he does.
I mean, he's done a lot of things.
Pat on the back.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. I like him. I tell people this all the time. Let's see. The two evils.
I'm being told it's illegal to suck up to the FCC on the air.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Never mind.
Do that again, and we'll probably get a fine.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, anyway.
Which we'll be happy to pay.
True.
We're honored to. No, never mind. Let's just continue.
We're in the wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
The FCC does not oppose low power FM.
No.
Which are basically stations like Radio Mutiny and Steal This Radio and things like that.
Well,
you know,
except
alternative
licensed
voices.
By the FCC, whereas Radio Mutiny and other ones are not.
Well, that's because they couldn't be licensed by the FCC. It was impossible. But now, you know, the possibility exists. So who do you think is really steadfast against this?
Probably the large music consortiums who don't particularly want their music like going out. The same ones who are trying to fight MP3.
Mm-hmm.
And the large super mega corporations that own like 14 stations.
Okay, well, you're half right. Actually, you're a quarter right because you're half right on one of those.
Oh, thank you.
You're totally wrong on the music thing. I don't know, actually. They haven't said anything
they
know.
A popular target lately.
But the National Association of Broadcasters, which represents those mega corporations, has come out dead set against it. And the other entity, which might surprise a lot of people, has come out dead set against low power FM, National Public Radio.
Really?
Yeah. It doesn't surprise me. It might surprise people out there, but it does not surprise me because I'm very familiar with the way they operate, basically swallowing up frequencies everywhere they can possibly find a space and just sort of making sure that they feed their signal into your head one way or another.
The Microsoft of broadcasting.
Well, yeah, I guess, except Microsoft isn't affiliated with them as they are with NBC, but yeah. It's that mentality, just basically you will submit to us. I used to think, and I still do to a degree, that religious FM was the big threat for non-commercial radio because they swallow up frequencies that could be used for, you know, college radio stations, and in fact it is a commercial product that they are peddling. So now NPR, though, has all this money behind them, and the thing is, the way it works with the Corporation for Public, real tongue twister, Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
And viewers like you.
Yeah, federal funds, things like that. The way it works, the more money you get, the more you can spend, and the more you can buy up other stations and expand your signal. You know, that's why it's so troublesome when we talk about accepting federal money here at BAI, which is something that a lot of us are loath to do. It's a troubling precedent to set. It really is. So, National Public Radio, totally against low-power FM. You have to wonder about that, you know. They're against... alternative voices.
But I kind of like All Things Considered.
Well, that's fine. You know, you won't have any trouble hearing it, that's for sure. I guarantee you, no matter where you are in the country, you will not be away from an NPR transmitter someplace.
I usually listen to it on the web anyway. So.
It's disgusting. It really is. I counted no less, actually, than 16 different frequencies you can hear All Things Considered on between here and Montauk Point.
Woohoo!
Is that incredible? Only one frequency you can hear us on.
True.
So if you're listening to us, you're that much better because... You're more selective. It's really sad, though. I have nothing against them. I have nothing against, you know, commercial radio stations. But come on, guys, give other people a chance. You know, I think that the NAB, particularly, National Association of Broadcasters, says that they can't possibly coexist with low-power FM because there'll be interference issues. I think the FCC should say to them, okay, then take your station off the air so these low-power FM people can survive.
The problem with that is money.
Yeah, why is it that the people with the money are the people that have the right to speak out and have a radio station? Why is that?
Because they have the money.
Yeah, but that's not the way the airwaves should work. The airwaves are not
the way the
something
works.
That is owned by a corporation. They're the public airwaves.
I agree with you. But just about any question you can ask as to why this group is capable of doing something that some other group can't can usually be summarized with, well, they have all the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's a troubling situation, but it happens to be what we live with.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying we don't have to live with that unchallenged.
True.
And that's what I hope people continue to do, challenge things.
Indeed.
Speaking of money, speaking of lots of money,
lots
speaking
of
the media... You heard the news today.
What would that be?
Oh, boy. Well, CBS and Viacom want to merge.
Wait a second. I thought CBS was a wholly owned subsidiary of Westinghouse.
Okay, this is where it gets confusing. Maybe some of our listeners can help us out with this one, because I've been asking this question all day of all kinds of people, and nobody knows the answer to it.
Okay.
CBS right now is owned by Westinghouse, correct?
Okay.
Now, CBS also owns all kinds of radio stations, including K-Rock, WNEW, WCBS, WFAN, WINS. They own all these stations.
So are they indirectly owned by Westinghouse?
They're owned by Infinity Broadcasting, which is owned by CBS, which is owned by Westinghouse.
Okay, so we've got like four layers of paperwork.
You got a lot of things going on here.
All right.
So now, all of a sudden, out of the blue, Viacom runs in. Viacom being the owners of Paramount, Simon & Schuster, Blockbuster Video, and of course, all those nice cable networks that we're so happy with, MTV, VH1, Showtime, Nickelodeon, TV Land, things like that. They want to step in and merge with CBS. All of a sudden, CBS will have a strong presence in cable now, which they never had before. But the question is...
Except for the game show network.
The question that I have, and the real confusing issue here, where does Westinghouse fit in? Have they bought CBS? Are they going to buy CBS from Westinghouse? Are they taking over Westinghouse? Is MTV going to be a military contractor now?
Yeah,
how does it work?
I was about to say they're too busy making nukes to really bother themselves with the mine. Well, maybe not.
I'm just not that familiar with the way the whole corporate structure works, and I have not seen mention of Westinghouse any place in any of the news items about this. So, how does Westinghouse? They say it's a merger. Well, is it a merger or is Westinghouse selling them CBS? How does that work? So one of you financial experts out there, please give us a call, 212-209-2900. We don't want theories, we want facts. You know, we want people to tell us what's going on here, because this is important. This is really a mega merger here. And just more instance of how fewer and fewer people are controlling more and more of the media. It's really sad. Imagine if the news instead said Pacifica had been taken over by Viacom. How would you feel about that?
I wouldn't feel too good about that.
Oh, we'd be linked up with MTV. We'd get all the cool music and you know,
well, that's
things
not bad,
that.
Yeah.
No, it is bad. It sucks because they only program a few songs out of like 10 million.
I've never
tell you.
I don't watch MTV, so.
Well, you're lucky.
Oh.
Or closer to home, we have some.
I don't have cable.
You're lucky. No, really, cable TV has gotten as bad as commercial TV ever was.
Woo-hoo.
Except now you're paying for it.
Woohoo!
And you get to see commercials too on top of that. All right, Kevin Mitnick update. Kevin has been transferred yet again, this time to Lompoc, which is a much better place than the place he was in before, San Bernardino. I understand that there's at least the possibility he's getting kosher food. I have not heard the details, and the reason being that Kevin is no longer allowed to call us until we verify that he can call us. It's a big bureaucratic mess.
Huh?
They have to send us a letter of some sort. His grandmother called me a couple of days ago and said that they needed to send me a letter so I could verify that it's okay for him to call me. And the thing is, he can't call collect anymore. He has to pay for it himself.
Ouch.
Yeah, so that's really going to hurt, and it's going to make things a lot more difficult.
At the prison payphone rates.
Yeah, you can imagine what that's going to be like. I also heard, and I'm not sure about this yet,
send him rolls of quarters?
We can send money orders, and I don't have the address yet. The address will be on the website as soon as we get it, which is www.freekevin.com.
Excellent.
The thing is, I've heard, and I'm not entirely certain about this, that he was transferred to Lompoc Minimum Security Prison as opposed to the Lompoc Camp. Now, if you recall, the camp is similar to the place Fiber Optic went to back in 1994, where it's kind of like a dormitory. You have some degree of freedom. You can look at the sky and go outside a little bit. You just can't leave. Minimum security, of course, is much worse. It's actually behind barbed wire fences and with prisoners and cell blocks and things like that. If that is true, I can't imagine why they would put him in such a place, other than retribution of some sort or sending some kind of stupid message. He really doesn't belong in a place like that. He's already been in prison over 4 years, 4.5 years, in fact, most of that time without trial. Come on, guys, where's this going to end? So we'll have more information, including his address, hopefully next week, as soon as we get it. Keep checking the website. We'll update people as we get information. But again, it's very hard to communicate because, they've made it very difficult, unfortunately. Getting back to the FCC for a moment, this is very disturbing news from the Associated Press. A court ruling overturning federal protection of telephone customer records puts the interest of phone companies over the rights of consumers, a top federal regulator says. That would be your friend, Bill Kennard. Yeah, he said the court's decision to reject the commission's rules remove important protections to consumer privacy. I think it's a sad day when the First Amendment rights of telephone companies to solicit business outweighs the rights of consumers to protect their privacy. Things such as calls made to a doctor or to a help group and the frequency of such calls could become information that marketers snatch up and use to target you.
As if the telephone companies don't have enough money already gouging you for the service.
Yeah,
they have to
it's unbelievable. Basically, what they can do is it's like when you dive into a computer and look at somebody's phone records. And that big invasion of privacy that we're all going ballistic over. Now the phone companies are going to say, yeah, we'll offer that service. We'll say how many times this person calls this place. We'll tell you that. And then you can use that to market things. It's disgusting, but that's how apparently they want to conduct business.
Okay.
I say if they do things like that, we target them. And
well,
we show who's doing this. Because it'll become pretty obvious. And it's already started to become obvious. Look what I got in the mail. Nice little letter from AT&T.
Ooh, the Death Star.
Yeah. But listen to this noise that you're about to hear.
Uh-oh.
Ready? What does that sound like to
that
you?
That sounded like plastic.
It was plastic. Plastic falling on a table. And it's my new credit card, my new MasterCard from AT&T.
AT&T sent you a MasterCard?
AT&T sent me a MasterCard.
I thought they only dealt in calling cards.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting you should say that because they did only deal with calling cards. There is an AT&T MasterCard of sorts, but you have to apply
for
it.
Yeah, it's a corporate thing.
Right. But the problem with this MasterCard is that I never asked for it. I never asked for this MasterCard, and here it is sitting in my hand. MasterCard right there. I mean, you know, this is nuts. So, I looked in the mailing, and hang on, there's about 50 pages in here, so you have to bear with me while I find the one that's applicable. Ah, here we go. Welcome to AT&T Personal Rewards. Be yourself. Be rewarded. Start with $100 in free AT&T calls. Yes, get ready to be rewarded. Why? As a special thank you for being a preferred AT&T customer.
Aww.
You've been enrolled in what we think is the best rewards program ever, AT&T Personal Rewards. With more ways to earn points and exciting redemption options, it's easy to get rewarded for the things you do every day.
Are you excited? Come on, they're exciting options.
Call this number to activate your AT&T Personal Rewards membership and your AT&T Personal Rewards Citibank MasterCard, then start using your card for everyday purchases and watch the points add up. This card replaces your AT&T calling card.
Mm.
So cut up your old AT&T calling card.
They actually say
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it says that right there. Now, what does this tell you? This tells you that they basically take your calling card. They can't use your calling card as a way to approve you for a MasterCard. That doesn't make any sense. So they have to be diving into your credit report without your authorization. Is there any other possibility here? So they went into my credit report, said, yeah, I guess he qualifies, and sent me a MasterCard, just like that.
I
resent
this. I'm a little dumbstruck.
Yeah, I resent this kind of intrusion.
As you should.
Yeah. Let's call them. I have a special number here. Might as well invade their privacy a little bit.
As opposed to zero. Well, that's another story.
Okay. I'm waiting for a dial tone. Is there a dial tone there? Ah, here we go. Just going to ask them a simple question, that's all.
This is the number on the card?
Yeah. I'm supposed to activate it. Maybe I'll get a computer. It's entirely possible.
Thank you for calling AT&T Personal Rewards. If AT&T is your current long-distance carrier, press 1 now. If your long-distance carrier is other than AT&T, press 2 now.
They're going to try and get you here, too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
Switch.
Not. I don't have a touch-tone phone, so I can't press anything.
I'm sorry, but I did not receive your response.
You know why? Because I don't
try
have
again.
A touch-tone phone.
Thank you for calling AT&T Personal Rewards. If AT&T is your
you don't care about people that don't have touch-tone
carrier,
phones, do you? They're not worthy enough to even, like, be talked to.
Your long-distance carrier is other than AT&T. Press 2 now.
Okay, I'm not pressing anything. You might notice that. That's not because I'm being stubborn. It's because I don't have a touch-tone phone.
I'm sorry. We are still unable to understand your entry.
So what are you going
to
do?
Please stay on the line while we transfer you to an AT&T representative.
Oh, was that just to mock me or something?
Please wait.
Okay, we'll wait. We won't wait forever.
But that's what they'll expect.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for calling AT&T Personal Rewards. My name is Crystal Hocreef. May I have your telephone number beginning with the area code?
Well, actually, I just had a very brief question. I got a MasterCard from AT&T. I was just wondering why.
Okay, well, pretty much the only reason you got that was because they did, you were creditworthy. You had a good credit background.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, Citibank was actually the ones that sent them out, and they just decided to send them out to everybody that was creditworthy.
Uh-huh. So they basically checked me out and made sure I had a good credit record?
I'm not 100% sure. I can transfer you over to that number.
Okay. That would be great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Just take me one second.
Sure. Oh, listen to this.
This is a very nice person.
It's classical music from NPR. They'll get you wherever you are.
Welcome to AT&T Personal Rewards Citibank MasterCard.
You're not real, are you?
Touchstone or speak your 16-digit account number now.
You want me to speak my number? I'm not going to do that over the air. That's not secure. I mean, surely you don't want me to...
Avoid unnecessary delay.
Yeah.
Please touchtone or speak your 16-digit account number.
Okay, well, no, I'm not going to speak it or touchtone it because I'd rather have the delay than read my number out loud here in this crowd.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you can touchtone.
There's people with pens and pencils.
Please touchtone or speak your 16-digit account.
He's getting agitated.
Now.
Listen, I can't do that. There's a reason. I just have a very simple question. Really, I do.
Please hold for a customer service associate.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hello, this is Jolene. May I have your name, please?
Yeah, hi, my name is Emmanuel. I just had a very brief question concerning why I got the MasterCard in the mail, because I never asked for it.
You may have the account number?
I don't have it right in front of me. I just had the phone number, so I'd just like to get an answer to that question.
Well, I have no reason why, because without having the account or the card, I don't know whether you applied for it, somebody sent it to you.
Well, I know I didn't apply for it. I definitely know I didn't apply for it. I was just wondering, did you send it out to everybody who was an AT&T customer or something?
That's a possibility, because that's what I said. I can't pull up anything without having the account number. About I can with your Social Security number, and then I'd be able to see which kind of account it is.
So if I give you my Social Security number, we could clear this up, I
guess.
No, that's okay. I'll just go with my original assumption. But thank you very much for your help.
Thanks for calling Universal Card Service.
All right. My pleasure.
The Universal Card Service. That's interesting.
Corporate America is out of control. Yeah, you know, if you want to clear it up, just give us your Social Security number, and we'll be happy to keep even more information
on
it.
Well, evidently they already have it if they're giving you credit.
I never give phone companies credit, but apparently they went and took it anyway. You know, I never give them credit information, not once. All right. Another bit of joyous news from AT&T.
Oh, but that's where the Blue Death starts.
If you listen to past shows, and you can hear them all on the Internet, you know that we've been playing around with something called AT&T Easy Reach, which basically was a service that allowed you to have a single phone number that would follow you around for the rest of your life.
Woohoo!
Yeah. And so we got one of these numbers right when they introduced the service, back in the early 90s, I think. And I remember the number we got was 700 number, and then it was 751-2600. And you had to dial 0700-751-2600. We originally had that set up to go to our voice bulletin board. Of course, you had to route it through AT&T, any other phone company, and it would go someplace else. So the way the 700 area code works, it's carrier-specific. So then a couple of years after we had that number, the number that we're supposed to keep for the rest of our lives, they sent us mail saying that they're changing the number. And instead of having a 700 number, we would have a 500 number, 500 area code. For some reason, this was going to be even more convenient than the 700 number. However, they allowed us to keep the 700 number, but also have a 500 number.
Okay, so now you're just adding an extra line to your business
card. Now we have two numbers, okay. Two different numbers. And to be all honest, I don't even remember what the 500 number was, because they only had a couple of exchanges and they gave us some bizarre number. So we still have the 700 number. But now this letter that they just sent us says that AT&T would like to take this opportunity to notify you, a valued AT&T customer, something I already know because
yes,
they sent me MasterCards.
MasterCard.
On November 15th, 1999, AT&T EasyReach 500-700 service will be discontinued. Yeah, the phone number for life didn't last too long, did it?
So they're declaring you dead now?
I don't know.
Are they going to revoke your card?
This was a service that provided optional features and in no way will affect the other AT&T services to which you subscribe.
I like that. This was a service. It's already gone.
We regret any inconvenience this may cause. Now, this is the interesting part. The FCC will normally authorize such a proposed discontinuance of service unless it is shown that customers would be unable to receive service or a reasonable substitute from another carrier, or that the public convenience and necessity is otherwise adversely affected. If you wish to object to this discontinuance, you should file your comments within 15 days after receipt of this notification. Letters should be addressed to the Federal Communications Commission, Washington, D.C., 20554, referencing Section 63.71, Application of AT&T Corp. Your comments should include specific information about the impact of this proposed discontinuance upon you or your company, including any inability to acquire reasonable substitute service. We know AT&T EasyReach 500-700 services have helped you stay connected by allowing people to reach you at different places. The good news is that now we have a more complete way for you to stay connected, AT&T Personal Network.
That's more costly, likely.
Well, they go into this whole big thing about how you can get an 800 number and, you know, I'm sure pay more for that.
Of course.
The whole point of having a 700 number was that you wouldn't be getting an 800 number. You'd have basically a choice where the person could either pay for the call, you pay for the call, and you could route it to all kinds of different places at you know, the touch of a touch tone. So we'll just have to see if their service continues to allow that. Somehow I doubt it. Let's try giving a call to them.
AT&T or the FCC?
Actually, to our number.
Ooh.
I'm not sure if it's going to work, actually. It might.
Please enter your destination number now.
Destination number? Okay. Well, I'll enter the number again. I don't think this is going to work.
Please hold. Your call is being transferred.
I wonder where it's being transferred to.
Quest operator, this is Melinda. Can I get the area code and destination or number you're calling, please?
What company? What company is this?
Quest.
How did I get you?
I'm your long-distance operator.
Oh, you're the long-distance company. Okay, I'm trying to reach an AT&T number.
Okay.
I don't suppose you can route me to an AT&T number, can you?
I can tell you an AT&T number. You can call 1010. 880,
uh-huh.
And you'll get an AT&T operator.
Okay, I'll give that a shot.
Okay,
thank you. Problem with that, and I don't know why we got Quest. Apparently, Quest is our long-distance company, which is something else I'm going to verify in just a second. But apparently, we can't access that because the carrier access codes don't work here, I don't think. Let's try it. Dial tone, please. 1010-288, and then 0700, and the phone number. See if this works.
That's very convenient.
It allowed us to dial, so maybe it'll work. It always took a long time to connect, so I'm not disillusioned yet. All right, now I'm starting to get disillusioned because it should have connected by now.
I feel that like the Jeopardy theme song should be playing.
No, this is silly. There's no way I can call this number. Actually, you know, there might be a way I can call this number.
Uh-oh.
If I go through 800, the 800 number that AT&T has, I think that allows me to call that. So, okay, let's see if we can figure this out. I don't like when things just die like that, you know? That's not right.
Well, it's just going to die on November 15th.
Yeah, that's true. This is a prelude of things to come. All right.
As a service to our preferred customers, we're giving you a demonstration of your failed service.
All right, so here we are, calling AT&T now.
AT&T. To place a calling card or credit card call, press 1. To place a collect call, press 2. For AT&T customer service, press 3. For 00 info, U.S. directory, press 4. For operator assistance, press 0.
Okay, I think we're pressing 1.
Please dial the area code and 7-digit number that you are calling.
All right, let's try this.
Please enter 0, 1, and the international number that you are trying to reach now.
All right, let's give this a shot.
AT&T.
Effective November 15th, 1999, AT&T intends to discontinue EasyReach 500-700 services. Please contact your AT&T service representative at 1-800-982-8480 for further information.
If you have an EasyReach PIN, enter it and then press the pound key. If you don't have one, just press the pound key to complete this call.
See, that's the option. You can either pay for the call
or... If you need help, press star H.
Star H, let's do that.
H.
If you are calling an EasyReach subscriber and you were given a personal identification number or PIN, you should enter that number and then press the pound key. If you were not given a PIN, just press the pound key. The pound key is below
the
9.
Yeah, I know. I know what a pound key is.
If you are an EasyReach,
this was back in the day when people didn't know what a pound key was.
You master PIN and then press the pound key.
That's right. You got a master PIN. You could set the PINs.
You must use a calling card to pay for this call.
Ooh.
To charge this call to your calling...
Okay, well, you get the idea. You get the idea. That's, you had all kinds of different options, and you had different pins you could give out to different people, and you had a master pin that you could use to set things up.
That's pretty cool.
All that's going to go away November 15th, unless people speak up and do right, something
that,
about it.
That was pretty cool.
Thing is, I don't think anybody has that service anymore, so I doubt there's going to be much of a grassroots organization sprouting up to save it. A couple of other things that are pretty interesting. First, I want to call the 700 number to verify a long-distance carrier as Quest, which I didn't know anybody around here had Quest in the first place. Actually, I heard a couple of people did, but it's fairly new in this area.
So what number is that?
That's the number we were talking about last week, in fact. The 1-700-555-4141. See if that works. Tells you you're a long-distance company. Okay, sometimes it asks for a special code because our BAI phone system kicks in, so I'm going to put that in.
Thank you for choosing Quest Communications. Thank you for choosing Quest Communications.
Isn't that cool?
Do they announce it twice?
Apparently, yeah, they do. And also, one of our listeners wrote in, thanks to Danny B. for sending this to us. Remember, we were complaining last week that there's no number for regional calls. You don't know who your regional carrier is, regional being not local, not long distance, but in between.
Right.
And that's the way that some of the long distance companies really are raking in money, because they're getting people to switch their regional calling over to them, pay more than the local phone company. Well, there is a number.
There is.
There is a number, and it's kind of interesting. It's the 700 exchange, not the 700 area code. So let's try that.
So it's your local area code and then the 700 exchange.
Well, you don't dial the area code. You just dial 700, then 4141. Well, it should work. I might have confused our phone system by doing that, but I've tried it from different phones, and it works from everywhere except here.
Oh, well. Trust us, folks.
Okay, well, that apparently is our local company, our regional company. But in any event, yeah, try that. In fact, I'm told that any four digits will work, 700 plus any four digits.
And, really?
I'd like to know from people around the country if that works for them as well, because it works here in New York. Works everywhere I've tried except here.
So they have an entire exchange dedicated to...
Well, how many people
you
did you know
number?
In the 700 exchange to start with?
Well, it's, no,
you know,
one,
kind of an unusual exchange.
That's got to be an interesting feat.
Yeah, but it's definitely something that people need to know as far as who your regional company is. It really should be your local phone company. If it's not, then I hope you have a really good deal with them so that you won't get ripped off too badly. So that's the information. I tried it from a payphone.
Mm-hmm.
In the subway the other day, and you know what I got? I got the 9X communications network.
Woohoo! They live.
apparently, they forgot to disconnect their recording there, or change their name, or something like that. So,
but 9X lives. That's great. I like that.
Yeah, well, if you're into that kind of thing, I guess it's kind of cool. All right, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Did you see this news story in today's paper? Police have confiscated a potentially lethal homemade cannon capable of firing potatoes up to 160 feet. Six youths in the seaside town of Kristiansund in southern Norway used instructions on the internet to build the weapon from everyday household objects. This homemade weapon is extremely dangerous both for those using it and those being fired at, a police spokesman told the newspaper that has an unpronounceable name and takes up two lines. The boys loaded potatoes down a plastic tube where an electric ignition device from a gas-fueled barbecue was installed. Police said the cannon was capable of launching any object similar in size and weight to potatoes.
Okay.
But potatoes seem to be the choice.
I'm more worried about the speed, because anything at a certain speed can be very damaging.
Well, they don't say the speed so much as the length, the distance, 160 feet.
All right. Well, what's the average?
If you've ever gotten hit by a potato, you'd appreciate that something going that far.
Oh, I've been hit by a baseball and a softball and other things going pretty fast, which would also fall to about 160 feet. So, yeah, it could be very dangerous.
And I believe these are raw potatoes, not cooked.
Ooh.
So that
makes
them,
nice.
They're harder that way.
Yeah. Well, they won't burn you that way.
Well, no, that's true, but...
I'm more worried about the people firing the gun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they got a little propane tank hooked up to a plastic PVC tube. I mean, come on.
Yeah. A survey of teenage internet users found that more than half said they have visited websites containing pornography, offensive music lyrics, gambling, or messages of violence and hate. The study of 501 American teens by the polling firm of Yankelevich Partners was released yesterday. I bet the one was like Yankelevich Jr. that made a big stink over not being included. The research was sponsored by a firm that makes filtering software for corporations. While 58% of all teens surveyed said they visited objectionable sites, those with poor grades reported doing so more often. What do you think about that?
I think they're trying to draw an artificial connection.
78% of teens who said they had a C average or less also said they visited such sites, particularly for music, violence, or gambling. Of the teenagers who said they accessed objectionable sites, 79% reported accessing the internet from the classroom or school library, 67% from home, 64% from a friend's house. The teens said they spent an average of 10.5 hours online each week. And the study also found that while parents were aware that their teens were often online, 1 out of 4 admitted knowing very little about what their kids were viewing.
Okay, how much TV are these kids watching, and how many nudie channels are they watching?
There aren't that many nudie channels, to be honest. And the nudie channels that exist don't show you much nudie stuff. They really don't, compared to, like, if you go to the theaters, which there aren't very many of either. Thank you very much, Mayor Giuliani. But anyway, I'm just pointing that out.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, our phone lines are full, so let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Pick a magic number that is not Rebel.
Oh, you know that I always
pick
ask.
A number.
4.
Okay, we're going to go with 3. 3 just went out. All right, I'm going to go with 5.
Oh, now. That was a good one.
Yeah. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hello, Manuel?
Yes, how are you?
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to answer the question about CBS.
Oh, you see, when you ask a question of a BI listener, you get an answer right away. Thank you very much for calling. What is the answer?
Okay, the answer is that... Westinghouse CBS merged with Westinghouse. Westinghouse was totally reorganized, and they sold off all their defense businesses in the early 90s. Actually, Karma's on from Infinity. They also bought Infinity Broadcasting. Karma's on rose to the top of the Westinghouse management, but his predecessor, a guy named Jordan, actually they sold all their defense businesses to various defense companies like Lockheed. I think some of it's in Boeing, some of it's in Raytheon.
So Westinghouse does no more defense contracting?
That's right. And their generator business was sold to a Swiss company, so and I assume that included the atomic energy division.
What about the washing machines?
Then the washing machines disappeared a long time ago.
Oh.
After they did that, they changed the name of the company from Westinghouse to CBS.
So there is no more Westinghouse, is what you're
actually
saying.
There is. They spun off some companies that they couldn't sell some of the small industrial production companies, were put into a group, and that was called CBS, and that was spun off. So there is a It just, some of it came public a short while ago.
Well, I visited the Westinghouse website earlier today, and they listed three companies underneath them, one of which seemed to be a defense-related company. Now, maybe that's an old website.
Yeah, but I don't think you'll find CBS in there. Do they list any media companies?
No, but the company was called Westinghouse.
Yeah, that's they as I say, they rolled a whole group of smaller divisions into a separate company and spun that off, and they called that Westinghouse.
So basically, the board of directors from Westinghouse sat down and they said, "We're now going to call ourselves CBS,"
that's
and they
right.
selected
because
another
CBS,
board for
after
like
they, that be, what was left. That was the largest. That was the old, essentially the broadcasting properties were the only thing that was left.
So original, wait, there is a Westinghouse, but it's not the same Westinghouse.
Yeah, it's a separate company. CBS may have a stock position in it, but it's a totally separate company.
Huh.
So that
I'm confused.
I rather like that. That's
well, you know, you've heard of all these corporate reorganizations. That's what the reorganizations are all about. But if you remember, in the there were a lot of defense mergers in the the middle '90s. A lot of companies just sold their defense divisions to the larger defense companies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically. So Westinghouse is. I believe Raytheon has like the side looking radar. The radar division.
Right. You need some kind of chart and compass to figure all this out.
Right.
This is really crazy. All right, thanks for straightening out some of it then.
Okay.
So now there's two Westinghouses. There's a Westinghouse
There's only one Westinghouse, but the original Westinghouse became CBS, and like those guys just said, okay, you lower middle management people, you take this like conglomeration of little things.
But
call
CBS,
yourselves Westinghouse.
Wait a minute, CBS is owned by Westinghouse.
No, this gentleman just said that CBS is now its own independent corporation.
But Westinghouse bought CBS.
Right.
All right, what happened to Westinghouse when they bought CBS? They turned into CBS.
The board of directors for Westinghouse, who had CBS as a, like, property, decided that, okay, we're now just going to call ourselves CBS.
And then they spin off the Westinghouse part of Westinghouse.
And all the Westinghouse stuff off.
But they still call it Westinghouse.
Yeah, but
except they just put it someplace else.
But it's not the same company anymore because...
How is it not the same company? It's the same people, the same name.
It's not the same people because all the people are at CBS.
So what, they just hired a bunch of new people out of nowhere?
I guess. Or else they, like, gave it to junior middle management.
Like I said, corporate America is out of control. I have no understanding of this. This is nuts. But you
That's
know what's interesting is that Viacom was a company that CBS was forced to spin off back in like around 1970 because I guess we were worried about this kind of thing happening. So they were spun off, and now they're coming right back, bigger than ever.
Kind of like that whole little breakup thing of the telephone companies and then the
mergers
quiet
between
mergers.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. It's pretty frightening. All right, 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Emmanuel.
How are you?
You know who this is, of course. One of the media people.
Ah, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, you're in the company. You're at MTV. You're the company that is going to be affected.
We had the memo passed on our, all of our desks as we came in. This morning.
What's the mood?
Well, some of us are worried, some of us aren't. But we did a little research, like you said. Back in the '70s, they were split up. And then, today when they got together, supposedly Viacom bought it for like $30 billion.
Right, $35 billion, I think.
Yeah.
That's a lot
of
money.
So, I don't know. I think it's more media related than anything, especially because right across the street, is the other studio that's going up right now,
Wait, and which studio is that? I can't keep track. Which one?
That's ABC.
ABC's building a studio down in Times Square, okay.
Yeah
right
but
across
Disney,
the street, like,
and
Disney
they got a
ABC.
Sign there that you would not believe. It's like... If you ever have the chance to see them test this sign, you got to see how bright this is, and it's only at 30% brightness.
Ooh.
And it totally lights up Times Square in the daytime.
Uh-huh.
So at night, I can't even imagine
Con Ed
what they're
going to
do with it. But, so apparently we just went in and took it, and the CEO of CBS is going supposedly to step down to COO.
Well, from what
operation.
I understand, the guy that owns Viacom, he's got the funny first name. Sumner, yeah, a great name, Sumner.
He's going to continue to
CEO. He's like sipping brandy next to his fireplace someplace tonight, Sumner. But yeah, he's like 75. He's going to step down at some point. Then the president of CBS is going to take over. That's my understanding. Not that I care.
Yeah, I couldn't care either, but just wanted to throw the 2 cents in the pot there because...
What do you guys at Viacom own right now?
We own a lot that's on right on the website. If you go to Viacom.com and go to sites, we own, like, amusement parks.
Which amusement
Paramount.
Parks? Paramount. Which amusement parks do you own?
Paramount Parks.
Paramount
I don't
parks.
Even know where they are.
Okay. And you own Paramount.
Obviously not a frequent pass holder to those parks.
Wait, you own Paramount, which means that you own Star Trek, right?
UPN.
Yeah. Well, actually, now that's interesting. You have a 50% stake in UPN. I happen to know that. And it's illegal. One of the few things that's still illegal is for one company to own two networks. So
yeah.
You're going to have to work something out with that.
MTV, VH1, Comedy Central.
Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon, TV Land, Google, which is, or Goggle or something. I don't know.
That's one of those new networks nobody gets?
Yeah. It's we got, actually,
is that
on
the one
satellite,
with the monkeys?
There's VH1, or Country, VH1 Soul, VH1 Smooth, MTVX, MTVS.
Now, before you get excited, two. MTVX is simply like metal, right?
Yeah.
That's all it is. Okay.
The X-Gen type of, you know, like, let's try to stay young.
Now, what I don't understand, I have satellite, and we get several hundred channels that nobody ever sees. Who is watching these other channels? The studio engineers over there? Or?
Well, yeah, pretty much, because they have to sell it all as a package. It's called, like, a digital suite. If you want to buy one, you buy the whole package.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of companies don't want to do this. They're like, oh, I'd rather buy Much Music instead. So.
Wait, who's buying Much Music?
A lot of companies. I know you can get it on USSB.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but they're not in danger of being bought out by Viacom or
no.
something. Okay, that's all I was worried about.
But we did buy the box, like, 6 months ago or something,
uh-huh.
I remember. So we do own the box, which used to be that thing on UHF.
Oh, yeah,
that,
yeah.
You could call the 900 number and get ripped off $3 to watch your video.
Right. Woo-hoo. I didn't know anybody had that anymore.
Yeah, I know we have it on our satellite system at work, but I haven't seen it broadcast anywhere else. Except for here in Queens, really late, sometimes on one of the Spanish channels, they play that as filler.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so distorted, you hardly can hear it. So,
muy bueno.
You know,
so
thumbs up to them, huh?
The mood there is kind of, what, sustained euphoria or what?
Well, you know, what I'm worried about as part of the IS thing is either work's going to die out for half the staff or it's just going to drastically increase because the Y2K scare. So.
Well, speaking of the Y2K scare, now that's something interesting. Isaac, are you prepared?
Am I prepared
for
what? Oh, 9999?
That's right.
I actually don't think there's going to be much to that.
Well, why not? That 9999 is like a pretty significant date.
Well,
especially because the Nostradamus predicted 7th month of 99, which 7 would translate to
September
back in Nostradamus,
yes.
You know.
Well,
figure all those missiles with 9999, boom.
Uh-oh.
That's what I'm worried about.
Well, 9999 was an end-of-file descriptor or end-of-program descriptor for COBOL.
End-of-world descriptor.
And a couple of other large mainframe machines. But one of the things that people don't really kind of realize is that dates on these machines were still stored with 09099.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're not going to see four nines in a row.
Let me let some other callers go through. I'm eating here, so.
All right.
You guys take care. Talk
bon
to you
Bon appetit.
Soon.
Well, that's... All right, I guess that alleviates my fear just
well,
a little bit.
There still may be problems, but I don't foresee it.
All right.
And somebody asked me about the Microsoft NSA thing.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Emmanuel. I'd like to mention that what I don't like about the commercial stations and the fact that I hope that BAI stays on and stuff, they don't let you talk. I talk about freedom of speech.
They don't let you talk?
Well, I call things like K-Rock. You know, they cut... They unless you're like... Getting to your point, like I called WCBS's Ask the Mayor or Ask the Governor.
You called Ask the Mayor?
Yeah, and then they say, what do you want to talk about? I tell them what I want to talk about. I say it, and then they cut you off right away.
That's what's known as a normal human reaction.
No, that's what's known as not freedom of speech and not a WBAI type of thing. In other words...
All right, let me ask you a question. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about the fact that the K-Rock Dayline is an 800 number, and they say, it's free to join, it's free to use, but guess what? When you want to listen to them, you can leave your messages, but guess what? When you want to listen to them, you got to call a 900 number.
Well, that's a scandal of the week, but thank you very much for sharing it with us.
He said he was calling K-Rock?
He was calling K-Rock, owned by CBS. Owned
oh, okay,
by,
I was going to point that out.
Viacom.
Yeah.
Wow, so all right, tell
they
us
may
about,
change their policy.
Tell us about this NSA thing.
Oh, the Microsoft
yeah,
NSA
since
thing?
If you're interested in that, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, it's kind of been like a wonderful topic being tossed around certain circles. It's a very old piece of news, but it's a new piece of news. With the release of Service Pack 5, Microsoft forgot to do something, which is basically remove all their debugging tags before they shipped it. So something that was noticed beforehand was that part of the ADV API 32.dll, it's a conglomeration of like advanced APIs in 32 bits, part of which is the cryptographic system for Microsoft, had this little thing with having more than one key. Now, what it's supposed to do is allow a common set of instructions to do certain cryptographic functions on your Windows machine, 95, 98, NT, and 2000, and to double-check different components you would add to the cryptographic segment of this. So it was supposed to be a verification for export regulations.
Okay.
Where, you know, they ship Windows NT out to Cambodia or something.
Train's leaving the station, Isaac.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. We're just running out of time here. All right. We don't need the whole history of that.
It's supposed to be a way of verifying that, yes, this particular component should be exported.
What happened?
What happened was that with the release of Service Pack 5, the tags were still attached, and there were two keys. There was a lot of speculation on what the second key was for. The first one was called underscore key. The second one was underscore NSA key.
That's not good.
So the theories have been bouncing around about why this is here. Like, oh, geez, the NSA threw a key in there so that they can, like, play with all our cryptographic stuff and, you know, make sure it's all exportable. Well, it turns out that they may have just shot themselves in the foot. Because how this particular thing was implemented by Microsoft in the twisted, screwy way that they have is that the different security packages are supposed to be verified by the key, in this case the Microsoft certification key. And if that fails, they go to the second key, which would be the NSA key. It's really fun because you can replace either of the keys. So the reason you can't... you can replace either key. What happens is that if you replace the first key, Windows itself, like, pukes and dies because it can't verify its own software.
Okay.
However, you can replace the second key, which means all of a sudden you take your stock Windows NT, your stock 95, your stock 98, that's supposed to have these, like, export controls in it from the NSA and everything, and you can replace the second key so that it falls over, and you can have just about anything you want. So by the NSA asking Microsoft to do this, they wound up shooting themselves in the foot by basically opening it to anybody to drop anything they want just by running a happy little program that replaces the key in the DLL file.
What do you personally think happened here? You think it was somebody with
ulterior motives of some sort? The speculation was that, oh, geez, well, the NSA did this so that they can add software and change Windows so that they can monitor us. Well, I think that's a sham simply because we already have utilities like BackOffice that do a fine job of looking at everything on your drive and managing to capture all your keystrokes. What I think is really the issue here is that Microsoft willingly, or at least was coerced to the point where a government agency was capable of saying, you have to put this in here so that we feel more safe.
My question is the only indication this is the NSA, the fact that it says NSA key?
Yeah, there's another piece there that says, you know, NSA might stand for Network Server Administration.
It could also be a big joke, couldn't it?
It could be a big joke. But the point is that the system was devised to stop people from adding greater than 40-bit encryption technology to the exported version of Windows. And it's kind of amusing that they wound up shooting themselves in the foot by specifically requesting that this other key be put into place.
That is interesting. I'm sure there'll be... When did this actually come out?
The NSA thing occurred end of August, early September. But the realization that there were two keys was made in 96 by a gentleman in the UK.
Well, how come no one's talking about it till now?
Because the NSA thing was like a big hype, especially considering the Waco engagement... the Microsoft Hotmail security bug. It's a fact that was kind of like well known for a while.
What does Waco have to do with this?
Government agencies interfering with private individuals so far as privacy and security.
Ah, I see.
I'm trying to demonstrate the climate that would have made this such a big deal.
Well, I'm sure we'll be hearing more about this in future weeks, so we'll look into it more and get people information.
Cool deal.
Yeah. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
A quick question. Is there a way to get rid of the national access contribution charge on my long-distance bill to choose a carrier who won't hit me up for $7 a month just for the privilege of my having them as their carrier?
Become an expatriate.
Well, the thing is that that charge is mandated by the federal government.
Well, is it mandated? The government says they have to charge it. It's not something that's permissive.
I believe it's mandated.
You always say, the government doesn't make companies charge fees, as far as I know.
Well, FCC regulations do require that sometimes, that, they get back their money somehow. I mean, there are companies that might swallow the loss if your bill is big enough. So if you have a big account and you say, you know, we're going to move our account to another company unless you drop this charge, they may drop the charge. They might.
Well, they're not going to drop it. They're just going to pay it for you.
Yeah.
All right. So you don't know. There's no way to get around it, basically.
Not that I found. I mean, I'd sure like to know about that. But these charges are driving everybody crazy.
I always use a dial around anyhow, and yet I have to pay this charge for my carrier that I never use.
Uh-huh.
And that's what's driving me nuts.
Yeah.
You have to have a long-distance carrier.
Well, the thing is, if you don't have a long-distance carrier, they charge you for not having a long-distance carrier, which is really absurd. And the charge is almost the same.
Yeah.
We live in sad times.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Yeah, so some people don't realize that the reason myself and Emmanuel and other people are really griping is that my telephone line, for instance, I make about 30 cents worth of calls per month. Meanwhile, my taxes and everything else bring the bill up to like 15 bucks.
Yeah.
It's rather ludicrous.
It's crazy. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. You mentioned earlier something about getting credit card without asking about it.
Ah, yes. And you'd like to know how to do that.
No, actually, I wanted to tell you some remedy.
Oh,
because
okay.
Because sometimes I get offers for credit cards,
uh-huh.
A lot of them. So usually it comes with an envelope saying no postage necessary if mailed in the United States.
So
right?
You attach a brick to it?
Yeah, I fill it up with garbage and cards and send it back so they will pay the stamps.
But what do you do when they already send you the card? Well, my point is, am I liable for charges on this card? I've never asked for it.
I don't mention my name in the envelope.
Uh-huh.
I just send it without name as a protest.
Yeah, the thing is, I can't protest this because they didn't send me an envelope that has postage paid, and the card has my name on it, so...
Well, you could pay the 33 cents.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks
for
calling.
I'll give you the quarter and the six pennies.
Yeah, but then I don't have to wait for them to do something. I can just mail off things to all the big companies I don't like.
Did I just say six pennies?
Nickel
and three pennies.
Point is, we've been deluged with junk, and we're paying for it, because that's why you have to pay all these stupid fees, to subsidize junk like this, you know? It's really sad. So if anyone has any creative uses for my unwanted MasterCard, please let me know. I still have to call up to verify it, though, to verify that it's mine, or probably they want my social security number. I bet that's what they want.
They already have it. It's the only way they can give you one.
I don't know what they want. Maybe they want my social security number in my voice, so they have that, so they can use it to open doors and
that's
something.
That's
I don't know. But
he gave it to us, really.
Yeah, we'll follow up on this in weeks ahead. If anyone has similar stories, please email us, oth@2600.com, or write to us off the hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. We'll be back again next week with another exciting adventure in the land of corporate America and cyberspace. Till then, Emmanuel Goldstein for Isaac. Have a good night. But if they could, they would. Only live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. But then they know.
Join Mumia 911, a day of solidarity, a day of art at the Breck Forum. On September the 11th, international art and solidarity events will take place nation and worldwide. In New York at the Breck Forum at 122 West 27th Street, from 11 a.m. to midnight, come and hear poets Amiri Baraka, Sandra Maria Estevez, Tony Medina, Pam Africa of the International Concerned Family and Friends, Reverend Billy, and the Mumia 911 Ad Hoc Jazz Ensemble. I'm Bernard White, and I'll also be there moderating a panel discussion about why artists should support Mumia. Included in this discussion will be comments by Dred Scott Keyes and Mumia's literary agent, Francis Golden. An art exhibit featuring the works of Ron Campbell, Michael Clemens, Sue Coe, Miriam Francis, Diane Greenlent, Gabrielle Corin, Dred Scott, and Danny Simmons, among others, will be on display. That's Saturday, September the 11th at the Breck Forum at 122 West 27th Street. For further information, please call area code 212-242-4201. That's 212-242-4201.
This is WBAI 99.5 FM, your community-sponsored radio. Stay tuned for Tahrir coming up next.